Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 75. It's August 12th, 2020. A collaborative circle combines the dynamics of a friendship group and a work group. At the core is a set of friends who, over a period of time working together, negotiate a shared vision that guides their work. As the group evolves, the members develop their own rituals and jargon, and each member comes to play an expected role. To illustrate a collaborative circle, I began with a sketch of the formation of the Inklings, a circle formed by J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, his brother Warner, and their friends. C.S. Lewis had his first conversation with J.R.R. Tolkien in May 1926, after a faculty meeting of the English department at Oxford University. For both men, it was the end of their first academic year there. Lewis, age 28, was a fellow, and Tolkien, age 34, was a professor. They met at a time when Lewis, who had studied at Oxford as an undergraduate, felt distant from his remaining undergraduate friends and a growing disillusionment with his faculty colleagues. For his part, Tolkien was in a period of conflict with his wife and in the midst of a struggle with his colleagues over restructuring the curriculum in his department. Lewis liked Tolkien as a person, but he opposed the position he took in the faculty meeting. Tolkien had argued that the English curriculum should focus on the language, a code word for classical English literature. He opposed inclusion of modern literature, which to him meant anything written after Chaucer. Despite their differences, over the course of the next academic year, Lewis was drawn into a large discussion group that had formed around Tolkien. The group, known as the Kolbiters, met to read and discuss Nordic literature and language. Over the next few years, Lewis ambivalently began to support Tolkien's position on the English curriculum. Often they supported one another in faculty politics and debates, but occasionally they found themselves on opposing sides. In December of 1929, the relationship took a new turn. In the course of that month, their collegial association deepened and the friendship became the nucleus of a collaborative circle that profoundly influenced each man's development. Until this point, Tolkien had been a relatively successful philologist and scholar of early English literature. His publications suggested he would have a distinguished career in an esoteric corner of the academic world. Lewis had published two books of poetry that hardly anyone had noticed, and even after he became famous, they were never well regarded. On December 3rd, 1929, Lewis wrote to a friend, "I was up till 2:30 on Monday talking to the Anglo-Saxon Professor Tolkien, who came back with me to college from a society and sat discoursing of the gods and giants of Asgard for 3 hours, then departing in the wind and rain. Who could turn him out, for the fire was bright and the talk good." Nordic epics had enthralled Tolkien when he was a child. His fascination led him to create his own imaginary mythology, and from the time he was 18, he worked sporadically at casting his stories of elves and wizards into an epic poem. Only once had he allowed anyone to see this work. In 1925, he showed it to an old mentor, who advised him to drop it. The rebuff reinforced his decision to keep the work secret. But after discovering that Lewis shared his interest in northernness and epic poetry, a few days after that late-night conversation, Tolkien gave Lewis one of the unfinished poems to read. It began, "There once, and long ago, before the sun and moon we know, were lit to sail above the world, when first the shaggy woods unfurled, and shadowy shapes did stare and roam beneath the dark and starry dome that hung above the dawn of earth." Lewis read the whole poem and immediately wrote to Tolkien. "My dear Tolkien, just a line to say that I sat up late last night and have read as far as to where Beren and his gnomish allies defeat the patrol of the orcs above the sources of the Narog and disguise themselves in the reef. I can quite honestly say that it is ages since I've had an evening of such delight, and the personal experience of reading a friend's work had very little to do with it. So much for the first flush. Detailed criticisms, including grumbles at individual lines, will follow. Yours, C.S. Lewis. When Lewis sent his criticisms, he playfully presented them as annotations to Tolkien's text, pretending that the text was an ancient manuscript and that his comments were long footnotes in which imaginary scholars with names like Pumpernickel, Peabody, Bentley, and Schick debated about the authenticity of particular lines and speculated about how the lines should actually be worded. Tolkien rewrote most of the lines singled out by Lewis and in a few cases incorporated his suggested revisions. Over the next several months, the culture and structure of the collaborative circle crystallized. Tolkien learned that Lewis liked to read aloud, and at Lewis's suggestion, he read sections of the poem to him. Gradually, others were invited into the group, including Lewis's brother, Warner, Hugo Dyson, Lewis's close friends, R.E. Havard, and Owen Barfield, and later in the decade, Charles Williams. As these meetings became more frequent, the members established a ritual of taking turns reading aloud their works in progress. Borrowing a name from a previous group, Lewis called the group the Inklings. Tolkien characterized the name as pleasantly ingenious pun in its own way, suggesting people with vague or half-formed intimations and ideas, plus those who dabble in ink. By the second half of the decade, they had established a regular meeting time on Thursday nights in Lewis's room in Magdalen College. On Tuesdays, some members of the group met for lunch and a pint of ale at the Eagle and Child Pub. The Bird and the Baby, they called it. Even before the regular meetings became ritualized, the dialogue between Tolkien and Lewis had led to profound changes in Lewis's identity and worldview. On the evening of September 1931, one of their conversations about language and poetry suddenly became personal. Lewis had invited Tolkien and Hugo Dyson, who was a lecturer at Reading, to dinner at Magdalen. Dyson was a talkative, witty man whose conversation was a flow of fantasy, keen literary appreciation, and occasional learning. Their conversation flowed from a discussion of myths to Christianity to the origin of ancient words, and jokingly, to the differences in how elves and humans understood language. After dinner, they continued the discussion, walking the paths around the courtyard and gardens of Magdalen College until 3 a.m. As the conversation went on, they gradually began talking about their religious views. For an Oxford scholar at this time to take religion seriously and to disclose his beliefs to a colleague was unusual, to say the least. As Lewis later put it, Oxford was in a post-Christian era. When he was in his early 20s, Lewis had decided he was an atheist. But after the death of his father, when he was 31, he began to reconsider his beliefs. Privately, he came to accept the idea that there was a deity, but this belief was not anchored in any religious tradition. He felt particularly skeptical about Christianity, which he viewed as a religion built on recycled mythology. For him, the story of the death and resurrection of a god resembled too closely the ancient Egyptian myths about gods who died and returned to life. Until the discussion with Tolkien and Dyson, he had not disclosed his thinking to anyone. But in the deepening exchange that night, he risked exposing his views. The three men shared enough assumptions that they were open to each other's arguments. Tolkien, who was Roman Catholic, agreed that the New Testament story was a myth, but he argued that it was a profoundly different myth, for it was also a true story based on historical events. Like all good myths, he argued, it expressed some fundamental truth. His argument, which may have seemed particularly persuasive to Lewis in the wee hours of intense conversation, was that the historical events had unfolded in the form of a familiar myth so as to create a story that would permeate human consciousness. Like an alien visitor, the deity had borrowed the language of a familiar myth to convey a theological reality. Although perhaps not firmly grounded in logic or evidence, Tolkien's argument had many fine points, and after several days' germination, the outcome of the conversation was that Lewis, the urbane Oxford scholar, decided to become a Christian. Possibly because of his Northern Irish Protestant background, Lewis could not allow himself to become a Roman Catholic like Tolkien, but he did decide to become an Anglican. Over the next year, with some variations in individual positions, the Inklings incorporated Christianity as a core component of the culture of their circle. As the structure and culture of the circle evolved and as their discussions continued, the members did not always agree, but they negotiated a shared mytho-poetic vision of narrative, literature, and religion that inspired and shaped their work. Their shared Christian religious beliefs and their fascination with a form of myth were the foundations of a vision that influenced the members' writing for the rest of their lives. For example, many of the themes in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings series and Lewis's Narnia tales first emerged in these weekly discussions. After discussing a theme, a member might go home, write a chapter that gave form to the theme, then read what he wrote in a Thursday evening meeting. As the men reacted to the reading, they helped to reshape the work, and in doing so, sharpened their own understanding of the emerging group vision. The early discussions in the Inkling Circle dramatically altered Lewis's thinking, and over the course of the next few years, the group interaction shaped both the themes and the style of his literary work. Recounting how the circle freed him to construct his own imaginative work, Lewis wrote, "Alone among unsympathetic companions, I hold certain views and standards timidly, half ashamed to avow them, and half doubtful if they can after all be right. But back among my friends, and in half an hour, in 10 minutes, these same views and standards become once more indisputable. The opinion of this little circle outweighs that of 1,000 outsiders. It will do this even when my friends are far away." In his diary from the period, Tolkien wrote that the friendship with Lewis compensates for much, and besides giving constant pleasure and comfort, has done me much good from the contact with a man at once honest, brave, intellectual, a scholar, a poet, and a philosopher. Many years later, Tolkien wrote of Lewis, "The unpayable debt I owe to him was not influence as it is usually understood, but sheer encouragement. He was for long my only audience. Only from him did I ever get the idea that my stuff could be more than a private hobby." The sketch of the Inklings suggests the ways collaborative circles develop and provides a glimpse of the process and influences we will be examining throughout this book. With the Inklings as our starting point, let us move on to a discussion of what we mean by collaborative circle. This is a little bit from the intro of Collaborative Circles, Friendship Dynamics and Creative Work, a book by Michael P. Farrell. And this whole thing's been on my mind, obviously, probably, if you've been listening to the dispatches at all, having traipsed a little bit recently back through Willie, Waylon, Shrake, these folks, Jim Franklin, Eddie Wilson, a sense of place where they can meet. I love that the Inklings sort of hang out in a pub. I miss being able to do that right now, COVID. Zoom's fine, it's better than nothing. It's better that we have it as opposed to not having it. If we were going through this without it, it would be worse. Nonetheless, it's not the same as getting together in person. And obviously, I, for 10 years or longer now, 12 years, corralled the regulars simply by showing up at Mozart's every Friday. But the regulars is not a collaborative circle at all. It's just a gathering. Hopefully, maybe even unbeknownst to me, there are collaborative circles that have kicked off because people have met at the regulars. But the regulars, by my own conscious choice, which might be a mistake, doesn't have that kind of agenda. It's not that directed. I would hope that things like that can spawn from it. Definitely people have found jobs, people have started companies, people have found allies, and that sort of thing. It happens. And I do, though it's not a directed, intentional, deliberate, like these, the individuals with the Inklings were all writers. And so that lends itself to, you know, you can share what you're working on, get critiques, that kind of thing. Wonderful. The regulars, by conscious choice, is people with all kinds of different pursuits and passions and professions. So it's different. Nonetheless, I do hope it shares the ability for people to say things that they would be not as confident to say in public. And certainly when this book, Collaborative Circles, was written, there was no social media. And absolutely in the time of Lewis and Tolkien in the 1920s, there wasn't this fear of immediate reprisal and rebuke. that we all endure today for stray opinions. Seemingly now, you're guaranteed to alienate somebody and summon annihilation from some sector. It's distressing. I like that the way that little bit of its history is presented. There's a whole book, a big long book called On the Inklings Itself. This book traces a whole bunch of different poet circles and psychologists, Freud and his crew, the Impressionists, a whole bunch of different ones. It does touch on, remind me of Talent Code and its talk of these hotspots, these places that can suddenly flash and produce ridiculous amounts of talent in one particular vein, like LPGA golfers or professional soccer players or chess champions, all from this small enclave in ways that don't make sense. So there's something about, it's paradoxical, which is always interesting. There's something about how the individual has got to go put in the time. The individual has got to deliberately practice. Ideally, you got a heady amount of unusual natural talent, but you must hone that through repetition and work, well designed, well executed. It seems another superpower, though, if you can find compatriots, people that you both collaborate with and compete with in a coordinated effort. And for something like the Inklings to go from these casual gatherings to more regular gatherings and for their own rituals and jargons to emerge, pretty exciting stuff. And again, hopefully just a tremendous amount of this is happening in ways you would never know in Austin or wherever you are. These days, I suppose they can be happening virtually as well. Though again, there is something different about being able to sit with someone and see them and share the same air and the same light, the same place and time. It's just different. Maybe it won't be forever. Who knows? Virtual reality and all of this. Who knows? But for today, it still seems to be the case. And though we might be losing some of the thread of Willie and Waylon and these folks, Threadgills is gone. The armadillo is long gone. Though we might be losing it, there's still so many people streaming into Texas. They're doing it for a reason, for a good reason. Hopefully we can keep Texas a great place to be and fix what needs fixing. And it hasn't been fixed yet. I don't think it's a newsflash what a lot of the problems are. We haven't quite figured out solutions to all of them. And we may never. So you get up tomorrow and you try again. Hopefully we keep doing that. And what I would say that I'm not convinced we're doing a very good job of today is knowing who is out there right now that's producing, that's plowing ahead, and identifying the next little bit of help that would kick them to the next gear in the talent code, the whispers of better get busy, and that could be you. To whom do we need to carry that spark? It's not, this little idea is not leaving me. Hope y'all are having a great one, and I will talk with you tomorrow.